Hello out there. Thanks for choosing us here in the podcastosphere. This is your host, John Shomo, with episode 25 of Then and Now, our little podcast. We were going to, first of all, I'll have to apologize for something. We were going to have an interview with Mike Shadawa, the Talmadge High School teacher and track coach and my friend, but we had some technical difficulties trying to get that done, so we'll have to try to redo that. Look for that interview in the next week or so. We'll get back together and get that done. It was going to be really good, too. We did it, but the microphone didn't work too well. So anyway, technical difficulties, we'll recycle and get to that interview and let you hear Mike in a very short time. Okay, as usual then, we will start today with our roundup of anniversaries, birthdays, et cetera, from the week to come. Starting with Wednesday, August 14th, and this is a full one here, folks. On August 14th, 1935, Franklin Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law, which is still obviously a thing in this country. It's now that I'm 65 years old, it's a little more of a thing than it was. But that law has really had tremendous ramifications for a long, long time now, almost 90 years. On August 14th, 1945, the Empire of Japan surrendered unconditionally to the Allies a few days following the second atomic bomb dropping on Nagasaki. The condition that we negotiated with them in the end was that we would let Emperor Hirohito stay as emperor, but he had to dissuade, if you will, the Japanese people that he was a god. They thought of him as a god, any emperor. And he had to kind of give that up as part of the deal to remain as emperor and, you know, to remain on Earth probably at that point in time. So surrender of Japan, VJ Day, August 14th, 1945. On August 14th, 1965, the Beatles appeared in the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City for the last time. They tape recorded a performance that was aired in September. They were in New York City. They played Shea Stadium, actually, the next day after they did this taping. The six songs that they recorded at the Ed Sullivan Theater in 1965 were I Feel Fine, I'm Down, Act Naturally, Ticket to Ride, Yesterday, and Help. And again, that show aired about a month later. On August 14th, 1971, our family was in Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, watching a Saturday night game between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates, who would go on to win the World Series that year. They didn't look like it that night as the great Bob Gibson no-hit the Pirates in that game at Three Rivers Stadium. Very memorable. We stuck around Three Rivers afterwards to see the Cardinals come out of their, you know, not clubhouse, but come out and meet the bus. And I'll never forget it. It was like an hour after the game was over, and Bob Gibson still looked like he had about three batters to face. He had the eye of the tiger, if you will, still an hour later. He's legendary for that, but I would vouch for it after that. On August 14th, 2003, some of you may remember that there was a power blackout over most of the eastern third of the United States. I'll remember it because it was in my first week or two of coaching the boys' golf team at Talmadge. We were in a tournament at Massillon Elms Golf Course. I went into the clubhouse near the end of the day's play, and they said, hey, the power went out, but, you know, we still have drinks in the cooler or whatever in the refrigerator, and things were still cold. And okay, that's interesting. So we finished and had the ceremonies and got on the bus and started to come back to Talmadge. And along the way on Route 21 and then the interstate, we looked at the roads by the side of the interstate and noticed that none of the traffic lights were working. So we had a couple of our guys had phones with them that we had kind of crude cell phones. I didn't, but they did back in the day. And they were calling home saying, yeah, no power at the house, no power anywhere. We got off the highway and there was a little bit of power at one little tiny corner of Talmadge. I got home eventually and our house had never lost power somehow. But that blackout affected most of the eastern third, almost to the Mississippi River of the United States. One year ago, August 14th, 2023, former President Donald Trump was indicted for attempting to overturn the election results of the 2020 election in the state of Georgia. That case is still pending. It hasn't come to trial yet. But that's when the mugshot was taken and all of that. Birthdays, August 14th. In no particular order, we have the Hall of Fame manager, the late Earl Weaver, the Baltimore Orioles' great manager, born August 14th, 1930. The now deceased, unfortunately, David Crosby, famous for his time in the Birds and later in Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. David Crosby, born August 14th, 1941. Steve Martin will be 79 on August 14th. Hard to believe. Mark Fidrich, the Bird. Baseball fans of our age will remember Mark Fidrich as one of the most entertaining pitchers that we've ever seen. He burst on the scene as a rookie for the Detroit Tigers in 1976, started the All-Star game, much like Paul Skeens did this year for the Pirates. Fidrich went on and was just a sensation that whole 1976 season. Had arm trouble about 1978, and he never had the career that we kind of all had hoped he would. He was sure fun to watch, though. Irvin Magic Johnson will be 65 on August 14th. Thank goodness he's still around. More about him later when we talk about L.A. My buddy, Eric Ball, will have a birthday on August 14th. Happy birthday, E.B. Halle Berry will be 59. Mike Vrabel, the former Walsh High School, Ohio State, New England Patriots, great, assistant coach at Ohio State and the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, now a consultant working with the Cleveland Browns. Mike Vrabel will be 49. Fun note here, my father coached his father in basketball at Copley High School back in the 1960s when I was the little ball boy running around. Happy birthday, Mike. Coach Carnath, I'm sure, would say happy birthday as well. And Tim Tebow, 2007 winner of the Heisman Trophy at Florida. Tim Tebow will be 37 on August 14th. August 15th saw the Mayflower set sail from Southampton, England, August 15th, 1620. The Wizard of Oz premiered in Hollywood theaters, August 15th, 1939. India gained its independence from Great Britain following World War II, August 15th, 1947. The Beatles, as I mentioned earlier, played the concert at Shea Stadium in front of 55,000 screaming maniacs on August 15, 1965. There is a film of that, you know, if you want to take a look at it. You can find it on YouTube. Napoleon Bonaparte, Emperor of France, born August 15, 1769. Melinda Gates, former wife of Bill Gates. She still goes by Melinda Gates. She will be 60 on August 15th. Senator John Fetterman, the junior senator from Pennsylvania, if you will. He's the big 6'8 guy with a bald head and wears the hoodie around all the time and shorts. Kind of like him. Senator John Fetterman, 55 on August 15th. Ben Affleck will be 52, and Jennifer Lawrence will be 34 on August 15th. Moving to the 16th, Indians shortstop Ray Chapman was beaned by the New York Yankees. Carl Mays at the Polo Grounds, August 16, 1920. Unfortunately, Chapman passed away from his injuries the next day. This is before batting helmets or anything, and pitchers were allowed to muddy up the ball and discolor the ball and so forth. He got hit right in the temple and passed away the next day. That Indians team went on and won the World Series anyway. Ray Chapman's the only on-field death in Major League Baseball history. On August 16, 1962, Ringo Starr replaced Pete Best as the Beatles' drummer. The guys in the Beatles mentioned, with no disrespect to Pete, that this was the moment that really they knew they had it. Ringo solidified the group into the group that we all know. On August 16, 1977, bulletins went out across the country and across the world. The king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, was found dead in his mansion in Memphis, Graceland. He was 42 years old. He died on August 16, 1977. The late Frank Gifford, a great player at Southern Cal and Hall of Famer from the New York Giants, who later on announced Monday Night Football games for a really long time. Frank Gifford, born August 16, 1930. His former wife, Kathy Lee, celebrates her 71st birthday the same day. Madonna, legend in her own right, 66 on August 16th. And Steve Carell, best known to millions of us as Michael Scott from The Office, Steve Carell will be 62 August 17th, the Republican Party nominated the Vice President of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, for president on August 17th, 1988. Birthdays that day include the late W. Mark Felt. Those of you who are historians or remember talking about it in class, Mark Felt was the man known as Deep Throat in the Watergate saga. He was the second in command of the FBI at the time. He was the source, not the only source by any stretch of the imagination, but he was a very key source that Bob Woodward particularly relied on to get information to keep them on the right track on their investigation, which eventually led to the downfall and resignation of President Richard Nixon. Actor Robert De Niro will be 81 on August 17th. Actor Sean Penn will be 64. Pains me to mention this guy. Christian Laettner, the former Duke basketball great, only college member of the Dream Team. He was kind of shunned by those guys. Christian Laettner will be 54 on August 17th. And Donnie Wahlberg will also be 54 years old on that day. August 18th, the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified on August 18th, 1920. Remember what that was, students? Yes, it was. It was the right to vote for women in the United States of America. Not until 1920 did we manage to get that done. It's kind of a shame, but thankfully we got it done. August 18th, 2020, in a virtual convention, former Vice President Joe Biden was nominated by the Democrats to be their presidential candidate. Birthdays on August 18th include Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark, the expedition searching for the Northwest Passage back in the day. They never found it because it doesn't exist. Meriwether Lewis, born August 18th, 1774. Former First Lady, the late Rosalynn Carter, born August 18th, 1927. Robert Redford, and this is hard to imagine, Robert Redford will be 88 on August 18th. I can't think of that. Former Ohio State Buckeyes and New York Jets running back, Super Bowl champ from Super Bowl III, Matt Snell, will be 82. Those of us who were Browns fans in the 1970s will never forget number 34 in the tearaway jersey from the University of Oklahoma, Greg Pruitt. So much fun to watch run the ball. Greg Pruitt will be 73 on August 18th. Wisconsin head coach, former teammate of Mike Vrabel's at Ohio State, Luke Fickle, former Buckeye great, former Buckeye head coach for a year in 2011. Luke Fickle will be 51 on August 18th. Last but not least, the great one, Roberto Clemente, born August 18th, 1934. Moving on, a couple more days left here. August 19th, on August 19th, 1934, Germany ceded all executive power to Adolf Hitler, making him a virtual dictator. August 19th, 1934. 20 years ago, August 19th, 2004, Google sold stock to the public, their IPO, for the first time. How would you like to have bought Google stock on the first day? I imagine that might be rather lucrative. August 19th, 1871, one of the Wright brothers, Orville Wright, was born. They hailed from Dayton, Ohio, as you may know. Ginger Baker, the drummer for Cream and Blind Faith, the late Ginger Baker, born August 19th, 1939. Actress Kira Sedgwick will be 59. Kirk Herbstreit, former Ohio State Buckeye captain. His father was also an Ohio State Buckeye captain, now known for his work on ESPN, College Game Day, calling games, the primetime game on Saturday nights. Kirk will be back to work here in a week or two. Kirk Herbstreit will be 55 on August 19th. The late Matthew Perry of Friends fame just passed away a year or so ago, sadly. Matthew Perry, born August 19th, 1969. And the 42nd President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, from Hope, Arkansas, will be 78 on August 19th. I'll refrain from doing an imitation at this point. August 20th, last day for this week, the USSR successfully tested a hydrogen bomb on August 20th, 1953. They're bringing them into up to our standards, I guess, if you want to call them standards. The Rolling Stones released their single Satisfaction, which really made them big in the United States, particularly, on August 20th, 1965. Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact tanks rolled into Czechoslovakia in an invasion to keep control of that Eastern European country on August 20th, 1968. The Democratic Party nominated California Senator Kamala Harris as their vice presidential nominee 4 years ago. The 23rd president, Benjamin Harrison, born in North Bend, Ohio, August 20th, 1833. The lead singer of Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant, celebrates his 76th birthday on August 20th. Recently inducted Hall of Famer, the Colorado Rockies first baseman Todd Helton will be 51, and Demi Lovato will be 32. That closes out our birthdays and anniversaries segment. We'll get back to that next week, as we usually do. And we'll move right along to our topics for this week. First of all, hats off to Paris. The Olympics, I thought, were really well done by France and by Paris and the Olympic Committee and all the athletes. Hats off to them. It was a great show. Those men's and women's basketball finals over the last weekend versus France were really intense. Steph Curry is just otherworldly. He made four threes, if you weren't watching, near the end of the game that they really needed, the U.S. team. And the fourth one is just ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous, really, that anybody would even take that shot, let alone hit it. And that carried us to the win, thankfully. The women's game was, we were talking about it yesterday at golf, the women's game was more like a slugging match in the fourth quarter. There was way too much contact allowed there. It kind of disrupted the flow of the game, really. But our women won by 1 point. Congratulations to them for the gold medal as well. Just a well-done show all around. I thought NBC did a great job. Not perfect, but really pretty good. Mike Tirico was unbelievable. I again, like I mentioned last week, I don't know when he ever slept during those 16 days. Hopefully he's taking a lot of naps here now. Next up, Los Angeles in 2028. The Summer Olympic Games come here. It'll be the third time LA has hosted. They hosted in 1932. They hosted again in 1984. The question popped up in a lot of minds, who's going to light the flame at the opening ceremonies in L.A. in 2028? A couple of people that came to mind. One, Carl Lewis, who won four gold medals. They were good, too, in the 1984 games. That would be a pretty good choice. I believe they'll light the flame in the Coliseum, where the other Olympics were held, as will these. Maybe Magic Johnson. How about Larry Bird hands it off to Magic Johnson and Magic goes up and lights the flame? I think, you know, those two gold medalists from 1992, I think that would be pretty awesome. We'll see. That won't be decided till summer of 2028. LA is building no new venues for the sports, by the way, in 2028. That saves a heck of a lot of money, one. Two, they're going to have to play some of the sports in other places. Softball, for instance, will be back in the Olympics, and it will be contested in Oklahoma City, of all places, or Norman, I can't remember which. Oklahoma, I know that. Okay, next, the interview on X on Monday night with Elon Musk interviewing former President Trump. You know, Elon Musk is a mystery to me. I don't know why anybody holds him in high regard whatsoever, other than he's rich. Has any quote-unquote entrepreneur ever ruined a successful enterprise as quickly as he has ruined the artist formerly known as Twitter? I'm not so sure. There were glitches and, you know, I don't know if you call it a blackout if it's on Twitter, but there were lots of problems, as there were earlier in the year when he introduced Ron DeSantis. Same sort of thing happened. Remember, Elon Musk didn't invent any of these things that he owns and hypes. Didn't invent the electric car. That was a guy named Tesla. He earned his money, if you will, because his family ran a diamond mine in South Africa and got rich on slave labor. There, I said it. I guess that's what happens when your first act as owner of the new enterprise formerly known as Twitter is to fire 70% of your workforce and brag about it. That's what he did when he took over Twitter a couple years ago. Was the interview a metaphor for the state of the Trump campaign right now? Well, I don't know. Maybe. It's not really going very smoothly, to say the least. It's very strange that Mr. Trump is not having any of his rallies lately. He had one rally over the weekend in Missoula, Montana, which was not very well attended, and he's not doing any of them. He seems to be thrown completely by the candidacy of Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. We'll see. I think they made a really awful comment last night too about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, talking about, well, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki came back. Yeah, they rebuilt the cities and they're pretty nice now. Oh, okay, so that wasn't so horrible after all. Really? It shows a real misunderstanding or not understanding of our history. Okay, enough about those two guys. The next item here, I've talked about it when I was a teacher, and I still think this. It's time to end the Electoral College, folks. It's an anachronism from way back in 1789, when most people in the United States, a new country, were illiterate. Millions of them were kept in slavery, and most of the people, the average American, had not traveled more than 40 miles from his or her home in their lifetime. It was to allow the quote-unquote wise people, wise men, it would have been at the time, to make the big decision of who should be president and vice president for us. We elect in this country every single other official, from local dog catcher, mayor, council, etc., state level, federal level, everybody else gets elected via the popular vote. We take the popular vote in presidential elections, but we don't go by it. It's an anachronism. It's time for that to go away. Unfortunately, it's going to be very, very difficult to see that happening. It would require a constitutional amendment to do it, which requires two-thirds of a vote both in the House and Senate. They can't agree on whether or not to tie their shoes, let alone something like that, by a two-thirds vote. And then three-fourths of the state legislatures would have to approve that before it would happen. There is one way that's being worked on by several states. There are a number of states, and I don't have the number in front of me, that have pledged, if you will, that if the number of states in their little group gets to a total of 270 electoral votes, then those states will all give their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote. But they're not quite there yet. They need a couple of more states to join. That would be a way around it, I suppose. But I'm not holding my breath for that. We're going to have the Electoral College here in the 2024 election. Understand this, and this may explain why one of the parties is not really thrilled about ending the Electoral College. Since 1992, which was a very exciting election with Governor Clinton, President Bush, and the billionaire entrepreneur Ross Perot getting 19% of the vote, by the way. Since 1992, the Republican candidate has only won the national popular vote once. That was in 2004 when George W. Bush won re-election against Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, and that was a very close election. Had Ohio shifted by about 80,000 or 90,000 votes, Kerry would have been president instead of Bush, and he would not have won the popular vote. So that's how many elections there? 92, 96, or, you know, that's several elections. I'm not going to count here. That only once has the Republican candidate won the popular vote. That might explain why some of the Republicans aren't real keen on ending the Electoral College. But it's way past time for it to go, in my view. All right. One little piece of trivia here before we get to our three good questions. And this trivia is courtesy of friend of the show, Josh Bennett. Hi, Josh. We mentioned last week Rocky Colavito's 91st birthday. Rocky Colavito, the former Cleveland Indians great, who unfortunately was traded to the Detroit Tigers right in the heart of his career. There was an old TV show that they used to show reruns of. They may still. I haven't seen it in a while. Called Home Run Derby. It was in black and white. It was done, I think, in 1961 or so. And it had all of the big stars in baseball from that era. Willie Mays was on it, and so forth. Hank Aaron playing Home Run Derby on TV. A little half-hour show. They packaged it and sold it, and it's really entertaining to us baseball fans. Rocky Colavito's the last living participant who was ever on the old Home Run Derby TV show. That's great trivia, Josh. Thanks for sending that. All right. Three good questions. We'll go back to Josh for the first one, and I had to really think hard about this one. Josh asked me to name the three worst vice presidential picks in my lifetime, in my opinion. And that was, took some thinking, because there have been a few not great ones. I'll go 3-2-1 here. My third worst VP pick in my lifetime, I'll go with Spiro Agnew, Mr. Nixon's running mate in 1968 and again in 1972. Spiro Agnew was the governor of Maryland. When Nixon picked him in 1968, the refrain was, Spiro who? Nobody knew who this guy was outside of, you know, Bethesda and Annapolis, I suppose, and Baltimore. Agnew, you know, he was the attack dog for Nixon. They won again in 72, but the feds started investigating Agnew for taking money in bags, bribes, etc., actually while in the vice president's office. They had him cold dead to rights in 1973. They went to Agnew and said, hey, look, we have you. We're going to indict you. We're going to put you on trial, and we're going to put you in jail unless you want to make a deal. And Mr. Agnew said, all right, we'll make a deal. He resigned the vice presidency, pleaded no contest to the charges, and stayed out of prison. That probably should put you on the top three. My number two worst VP pick was the Democrats' nominee in 1972, Thomas Eagleton, senator from Missouri. He was the choice of their candidate, George McGovern, Senator McGovern from South Dakota in 1972. McGovern had to withdraw Eagleton's nomination for vice president about, 10 days after the convention, because it was found that Mr. Eagleton had taken electric shock treatments for some psychological issues that he had had. There's no shame in that, first of all. But in 1972, that was an automatic disqualifier for a candidate. And I think, again, in the world of 1972, the McGovern folks should have done more homework and should have realized that they probably weren't going to win anyway. But that, you know, that pick really sunk them. Okay, number one, you could probably guess the worst VP pick in my lifetime was the governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, picked by John McCain in 2008. We look back on that campaign and kind of it seems like we look back and say, oh, Barack Obama, he had it made. He won very handily in the end. There was a moment where McCain had a shot, and it was around Labor Day, around the time of the Republican convention, when Obama, his celebrity had kind of worn out a little bit. I mean, it never really wore out completely, but McCain was pretty much even with him in public opinion polls as of the Republican convention, again, around Labor Day of 2008. And he picked Sarah Palin, and really, the mayor of Wasilla, Alaska, was not very widely known. Imagine that. And she turned out to be really just a piece of work. Just, you know, the comedians had a great time making fun of her from September to November. Senator McCain, a great man, a great American hero, but boy, he made a terrible choice. And that really, that and the financial crisis in October really doomed his chances of becoming president. So I'll go with Agnew, Eagleton, and Palin on that list. Thanks, Josh. Question number two comes from Nick Brausch. Hi, Nick. If you could attend any Olympics, past, present, or future, which would it be and why? That really is an interesting question. I picked a couple, if that's okay. 1976, the Summer Games were in Montreal, and that's when then Bruce Jenner won the decathlon, and that would have been really cool. Montreal would be a great place to see the Olympic Games and to just see the town. I was just out of high school, and that would have been pretty cool. The other one would have been the Lake Placid Winter Olympic Games in 1980, just because the single greatest upset in the history of sports, in my opinion, happened there. What a thrill it would have been to be in that arena to watch the Soviet Union team fall to the United States 4-3 in hockey. That was, again, the greatest upset. You had to be there. Made us all feel great, proud, patriotic. All of those things, and to have seen that game would have just been beyond belief. So I'll go with those two. Thanks, Nick. Okay, the third question is going to come from me, and we'll see if anybody has any answers for it in the next week or so. If you do, if you want to try to answer this question, send us the answer at our email address. You know it by now, threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three spelled out, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions at gmail.com. Here we go. Ready? How many sitting vice presidents have been elected president of the United States? That's a question that's very relevant at the moment, since the sitting vice president is the Democratic nominee for president and may very well go on and win. It's looking more likely now than it did 3 weeks ago, at least. How many sitting vice presidents have been elected president? So if you have that answer, email it to us at threegoodquestions at gmail.com. That's T-H-R-E-E, threegoodquestions at gmail.com. That just about does it for this week here in the middle of August. Thanks again for choosing us. There are a lot of choices out there for podcasts, and I'm just humbled every time I hear from somebody that says they're listening in and they're enjoying the podcast and they have some suggestions and so forth. It's really awesome. It makes it worthwhile doing all these, preparing them and doing them. So thank you all very much for tuning in, if you will. We'll talk to you next week with episode 26 of Then and Now. This is John Shomo saying have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.